I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Digit Murphy. Digit is the 2013 Canadian Women's Hockey League Coach of the Year and a 25-year veteran of Division I coaching. She's in her second year now as the Boston Blades head coach. Digit is the first female coach ever to reach 200 and 300 wins in Division I hockey. She led her teams to four appearances in the NCAA championship tournament. Digit is also a four-year varsity player for Cornell University and member of their Hall of Fame. She remains ranked third on their all-time scoring list. Pretty amazing. Digit is the president and co-founder of Play It Forward Sport and Digit Murphy Athletics. Digit, welcome to the show.
David, thanks for having me. And I have to make one correction on the bio. I must have sent you the wrong one, but I just retired from the Boston Blades after 3 years and retired from the top, Clarkson Cup champions, which is Women's Stanley Cup. So I am no longer the Blades coach. We are all in for Play It Forward.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that. So my apologies.
Okay.
If I misspoke on the bio, thank you for the correction. And I wondered if we could start off by talking a little bit about your background and how it has led to Play It Forward Sports and also to Digit Murphy Athletics.
Yeah, well, you got about 3 hours. No, just kidding, David.
But the podcast is probably going to be a little shorter.
All right, so I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. But basically, David, you know, I started my sports journey in 1972 as a young woman that was really searching, you know, to play sports full time. And, you know, back then there was not a lot of sports. I was lucky enough to, one of my best friends, mom and dad, started a girls hockey team in Cranston, Rhode Island. And in 1979 to 1983, I was lucky enough to get a entrance into Cornell and play on their hockey team, which was pretty amazing, from a small town blue collar kid from Cranston. And after that, Cornell, I went into the real world, if you will, and worked for a company called Data General Computers back then. That was Digital and Data General were the two biggies. And I worked in manufacturing, on the manufacturing floor, as a supervisor. And in, I think, 3.5 years, I had 3 promotions, and I was a yuppie, and I was driving my little BMW back and forth from Rhode Island to Boston. And I essentially got really, really tired of the grind in 4 years. So I ended up quitting my job at Data General, who's now at EMC, by the way, so I think they're still in existence. And I ended up going back to school to become a phys ed teacher. And in the meantime, the assistant coach at Brown University had resigned, and I called up the head coach, and I said, "Hey, I hear you're looking for an assistant." And he said yes, and in 2 years, I was the assistant coach at Brown. And in 1989, I became the first woman head coach at Brown University. And I went from 89 to 2011. I went up and down the ladder, had a lot of championships, taught a lot of young women athletes life skills. I could write a book on that, and I am. In 2011, as luck would have it, or non-luck would have it, I ended up resigning from Brown and retired, and then started on the journey with the Boston Blades. I'm going to stop there unless you have any questions, because I've got a lot to tell between then and now.
It's pretty amazing. I know that, you know, I'm not so steeped in the world of sports, although I've had a number of guests on this podcast who've had careers in sports, and because they're actually great analogies to what happens in business and leadership. And I think what you've done is phenomenal. Particularly, I know, having gone to Cornell also around the same time period, I was there for grad school. I know what a challenge it was several decades ago for women in sports. It's still a challenge, and I'm really interested to hear what you've done since, you know, in the last few years since leaving Brown, and kind of what's going on now.
Yeah. So after I left Brown, you know, I think, and let me just, you know, back up a little bit about, you know, what happened to me between the year like 2002, 2003, where we were at the top of the food chain, if you will, in women's athletics, and the end of my career in 2011. We were highly funded and we were highly supported back in that time frame from probably 1995. And when I say highly, you know, it's all relative, right? I mean, it's not like your Michigan football, right? Like your women's hockey. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, I was getting really great support at Brown. And, you know, we were cooking with gas. We were graduating Olympians. And then there was a big
difference from the 70s and 80s.
Oh, my God. And you know, and it's still, you know, believe it or not, it's still really, really behind in the times. But, you know, for what we were doing, it was all good. And then there was a shift in power, you know, presidents leave, athletic directors come and go. And, you know, it was really difficult to be a woman's, you know, sports advocate at Brown during years 2005 to 2011. And I'm a real, real, real aggressive, competitive female in sport. And, you know, I really believe that you need to have the right, unfortunately, you really have to have the right support system being this kind of woman. Because at the end of the day, compliance is rewarded in lots of field these days. And I'm a thought leader. You know, I'm someone that thinks outside the box. I'm someone that wants the best for athletes and advocates for them. So, you know, it was a rough go for me the last 6 years at Brown. And one of the things that I did to think outside the box in my career was, you know, it's unheard of. No one thinks you should do this, but I applied for the men's job at Brown. And when I applied for the men's job at Brown, I raised a lot of eyebrows in both the men's sports world as well as the women's sports world, because people were like, oh my God, I can't believe a woman's going to coach a men's sport. And I kind of was laughing. I was like, seriously? You can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be an astronaut, you can be anything you want in the world, but you can't coach ice hockey, you know, because I always believed that hockey, as any sport is, hockey, football, basketball, this is about teaching. This is about learning. This is about growing. These are about life skills that you teach young people in the sports world. So I got an interview for the job, which in and of itself was I don't know if it was a token or an achievement, but I got an interview and did not get the job. I had over 20 years experience in the field, and the person that got the job had never been a head coach. It was a man. It was an alumni, men's alumni. His name is Brendan Whitett. He's there now, and, you know, he's a nice guy, but quite frankly, didn't have the experience that I did. I just didn't have it on the men's side. Conversely, when you look at all the men now that coach women, they go from assistants on the men's side to head coaches on the women's side. So, you know, that in and of itself was something I think was one of my greatest achievements, what was actually getting an interview and interviewing for the position, which is sad. So once I left Brown, and it was fine. You know, I left Brown. And typically, when you leave anywhere and you retire, you resign, you get fired as a coach, on the men's side, someone picks you up. Someone, you know, there's someone else out there that recognizes your talents. And you go on to get another job. You know, you look at someone like Paul Pooley that got fired at Providence College, and he ends up being an associate head coach at Notre Dame. But at the end of the day, when you look at women's athletics, once you leave, at my age, at that time I was in my 50s, you know, you're done. So I got a phone call from Reagan Carey, who was the head of USA Hockey at the time. This is when I was leaving Brown. And she said, you know, they're looking for a coach in this league in Canada called the CWHL. And I said, oh, what's this CWHL thing? Because no one knows. She goes, well, it's the Canadian Women's Hockey League, and we have a team in the league. And I said, oh, I don't know if I want to go coaching Canada. She goes, no, there's a Boston team. And the Olympians are centralizing in Boston in 2013 because they're training for the Olympics, and you should probably take a look at the job. So, you know, because Reagan had kind of recommended it, I thought, wow, this might be a great opportunity to coach Olympians, get back on the horse, and, you know, really, really enjoy coaching again. Because at Brown, it had really gotten to a point where the lack of support for our program, and you can look at the records, they're still not, unfortunately, competitive. It was really a tough situation for me. So onward to the Boston Blades and the CWHL. Talked to the commissioner. Her name is Brenda Andrus, and you know, she's like, "Look, we're looking for someone to grow the Boston market." You know, she was on the track of paying the players. Everything sounded great. You know, we thought equity was going to be great, and we could start growing the sport again like we did back in, you know, the late 80s and early 90s, kind of Title IX 2.0, right? So we go in the first year. It was amazing, David, to sit there and go from being in the NCAA where you're on television, you've got, you know, some resources, you've got some marketing, you've got a support staff, to now I am both the head coach and GM in the first year, and my co-founder and partner, Rhonda Kirby, was always in the mix with me the first year. You know, we were kind of working in tandem to help the Blades become successful. And we went from essentially this great resource, from a great resource level, to now we're back to square one. I mean, we are manufacturing T-shirts. We're carrying them to the rink. I feel like it was candy bars and raffle tickets now. You're right back to square one in the 90s where we started. So we're coaching the Boston Blades. We win the championship. The second year, the Olympians go off to Sochi, and we know what happened there, that just devastating loss in the Olympics. But, you know, we were watching the Olympics, and we are the second most watched event in the year 2014, only to the New England Patriots Super Bowl event. So we're kind of watching women's hockey and going, wow, you know, this thing is pretty cool. But at the end of the day, these players are in an environment of what I just talked about, candy bars and raffle tickets, right? And that's not fair. So as we're kind of on this journey, Aranda and I, we're in our minds are thinking, wow, there's got to be something greater. So 2014 comes, we lose, and I'm still bitter about this, we lose on a really bad bounce in overtime. We lose the last game of the Clarkson Cup, and we come in second. And then in the third year, we get back on the horse, our Olympians are back, and we win the Clarkson Cup again. But we had kind of thought about it from day one and said, you know, we've got to do something bigger and better to help these women and help essentially women leaders in sport, because we saw it from a real, real grassroots level. We saw it from a business model. We saw it from a lack of respect model that is why we started the Play It Forward Sport Foundation.
Why do you think that there is such a discrepancy between men's and women's sports in 2015?
Well, there's a discrepancy in men's and women's sport because men have a 100-year history and women have essentially, it's not even 15 years, because Title IX, David, you know, really was enacted in 1972, and they didn't really start to even think about implementing it until the 90s. And actually, Brown was one of the schools that really pushed that agenda as well. By the way, I was on the stand 9 months pregnant, testifying against my employer in that case. So, you know, it's really been in my DNA to really push the agenda. But, you know, when you look at men's sports, they're good. They have had the resources thrown at them for years and years because essentially, you know, it's what men do, right? That's what everyone thinks. And the fact that there's not only it's more of like a social norm that says men play sports and women don't. And we have to change that. We have to change that because we are, as a gender, as women, we are at a disadvantage when we don't play sport, because sports teaches collaboration, it teaches cooperative behavior, it teaches how to win with class and lose with grace. And when you don't include half the population in that, I think it's wrong. However, I will tell you that that 100-year history has, you know, entitled men to think a certain way to how sports should be. And because they have all the resources now, women have a lot to do to catch up. And that's why the Play It Forward model is the shift in a paradigm to see women's sports through a female lens and not through just a male lens.
Talk to me a little bit about that. What's the difference in the two lenses?
So I think to just boil it down to opportunity right now, when you look at the NCAA number of graduates on both the men and women's sides, you're going to see thousands of athletes that graduate. So we're doing an okay job, if not, you know, a decent job of graduating both genders at the college level. I still think we can do a lot better on the women's side, but that's for another conversation. And so when you think of what the men that graduate in sports that are really, really good, they can go on to play professional sports. However, the women don't have that opportunity because you cannot sustain a livable wage. So what happens is you lose a huge amount of great players in women's sports by not having somewhere for them to go after they graduate. So when you look at how great men's sports is, it's because you have the best men playing the sport. So in order for us to get women to continue playing, they need to earn a living. They need to have a wage. So what Play It Forward is doing is it's finding this middle step to where the men are. So if the NCAA level, you've got that hundreds of athletes at that college level, now you have this middle step that Play It Forward is going to attack in order to get to that next step, which is men's sports. So what Play It Forward does is it uses corporate funds through, you know, our business development model to talk to big companies to recognize and value women in the community. What we would like is to have companies support our Play It Forward nonprofit so that our athletes that we employ, if you will, these professional athletes that might play hockey, that are going to play in the United Women's Lacrosse League, these companies would employ them to implement programming in the community, such as Mentor and Violence Prevention Program that we have a strategic partnership with Northeastern. One of our athletes could be one of their trainers, and they could make a sustainable living there, which would also allow them to train in their area, in their sports area, so that then they can still earn a living. So basically, you're infusing corporate funding through community programming so that these young players can now play their sport in a schedule that doesn't inhibit them from playing whatever sport they have. When you look at it through a female lens, and this is what I try to impart on our new commissioner of the Lacrosse League, or anytime you're thinking about a different way of looking at things, you don't have to copy what the men do. You don't have to do these 30-game schedules where you're home and home. You know, you don't have to always play on the season. Like, you could do something like the WNBA did, which was play in the summer. We are considering going to venues to take the players to big venues in lacrosse. So you can paint your own canvas if you start to think outside the box, because if you have women in control of their own destiny, in control of their own sport, you can start to see it through the female lens. Right now, because we only look at sport from a men's perspective, we only have boxed ourselves in as women into that male model, into the way men view it. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can do anything we want.
But you know what strikes me, Digit, is that you're finding solutions to a challenge by, as opposed to coming at it by saying, we need to gain entry into this arena through the existing structures. You're saying, well, we can find another structure that will support our goals in a way that may not be threatening to the existing structures.
Yeah, and it's funny. I kind of I tell the story whenever I'm talking to people. I'm just like, well, here's the deal. I said, unfortunately, when you look at what the male model has done to women, which is exclude them from leadership positions, and what's happened is because we just think automatically, and the athletes think this too, which is really sad. The athletes think that the men at some level should be the coaches because that's all they've seen. So I always tell the story that, hey, look, here's the deal. They wouldn't let us in the door in men's sports, so we have to now create our own door. We have to now control our own destiny. And I'm going to be honest, it's a heavy lift even with the women. I was on a panel last week with Shira Springer, Boston Globe reporter, Jeff Plush, I think his name is. He was the commissioner of the soccer league. And one of the soccer players as well was on from the soccer league was on this call. And they contend that we need help from the NHL, and we need help from the MLS, and we need help from the Major League Lacrosse. Everyone wants help from Big Brother. And if we as women could just think of ourselves as standing on our own two feet and working together and collaborating to face the challenges head on and talk about them and create a dialogue, that's what needs to be done if we're going to control our own destiny. If not, in my opinion, we get what we get. We get what we get when we put men in charge of our own destiny. That's what Play It Forward is a lot about. We want to help women control their own destiny in sport. And lastly, when you look at what we've done in the sports model just in the last year with STX as our sponsor, we have created 100 opportunities for women in the sports space. And I say women because under the Digit Murphy and Rhonda Kirby Play It Forward model, we are going to make it a priority to hire all women coaches and all women, you know, people that are helping out. And it's not that we don't like men. It's that we want women to have these opportunities. Our commissioner will be female. Our head coaches will be female. Our video people, our media people. That's the women's model. That's seeing sport through a gendered lens that's female.
Digit, do you think it's possible to draw any parallels with what's going on in women's leadership in business, both in the big corporate arena, you know, Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100 companies, particularly as you get towards the bigger companies, the number of women at the top is really small. And then the flip side is what's going on with women's leadership in small business, which is different. There are a lot of small businesses that are being started by women.
Yeah, I think that the time is ripe for this initiative to succeed, which is why we are in talks with some big companies, and we're trying to match up with what's called in these big companies the foundations of the diversity money that we should be able to tap into, because sports is sexy, right, David? It's sexy. People love sport. It's a great platform to teach leadership. It's a great platform for life skills. All corporate executives, I mean, look at everyone's got a life coach now. You know, it's called team building. Like, that's not by accident that it's about sports, because sports teaches everything you want in business. It teaches thick skin. It teaches competitiveness. It teaches dogged determination. That's what you learn on a team. So the fact that, again, we exclude half of our population, we are not training our leaders as much as we should be. And if people would just get behind the sports bandwagon in business and to really start to see sport as what it's viewed was supposed to be created for, which is a teaching tool, then now you can really think outside the box to help women. And we should not just look at this as a wins and loss on the score sheet. It should be looked at as, how are we now cultivating leadership, not only in our corporate boardrooms, but also in the schools?
So Digit, you clearly are a very creative thinker when it comes to trying to smash the plateau. Who have been some of the people who've influenced you in your thinking and have helped you develop the some of the ideas that you've tried to implement?
Well, I think first of all, I always go back to my my roots, you know, and I just remember as a little kid, not ever being your typical girl, right? You know, I always wanted short hair. I hated wearing dresses. I could hit a baseball when I was like 2 years old, not a baseball, a wiffle ball. And my family never told me, no, you can't do that. So I think when you look back at my earliest influencers, it were all the my grandparents, both sets of grandmothers who were like, you go for it, and the grandfathers that kind of said, yeah, I'm not telling them what to do. My parents who were like, you know, always telling me that, you know, you could do it even if you were a girl. I didn't even know, swear to God, like at the beginning of my life, you know, that gender even exists, which was really, it was really kind of cool, you know, until I had to go to school and wear a dress and I was pretty pissed. But, well, that's another story. But, you know, other people, influences in my life were people like Russ McCurdy, who Russ McCurdy hired me as the first woman that was on the national team. I was his assistant on the U.S. national team in 1988. Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind. 88, 89. And he really saw that women needed to control their destiny, and they should be controlling the sport. So he put his money where his mouth is. You know, instead of these guys now, unfortunately, that go out and make money off women, he saw that women should be coaching women and saw in me something that he could, you know, that he thought that I had the right, you know, attitude to help grow the sport. So he was major influence in my life. And another real big influence in my life is Arlene Gorton. Arlene was a professor emeritus at Brown, and she was an athletic director. And she really was a true champion of Title IX at Brown. And she was my mentor for years and years, and she still to this day is. She was always telling me to continue to chase my windmills and continue to just really follow my dreams and you go, girl. And she would tell me the expression that she always used, that when she was ever in a meeting with their athletic director, when they wouldn't let her do what she wanted, and they'd say to her, well, Arlene, there you go again. And she would shoot right back at him. Well, if you went, I wouldn't have to go. And so I've kind of had that in my back of my mind from day one, always like I can hear Arlene in my head going, you got to go because they're making you go. They need to go, so you need to push them. So, and then obviously my family has always influenced me in a positive way by never holding me back. I mean, you know, Aronda Kirby, my partner, is always pushing me to be the best that I can be, and she's influenced me in big ways. And, you know, all my kids for never saying, Mom, you should be home more, you know, because as a coach, it takes me away from my family a lot. And they've always remind me of the fact that they had, you know, Brown for all those years as their playground. And, you know, as a mom, it's really hard because, you know, you're always feeling guilty for, you know, missing their sports or, you know, missing out on stuff because, you know, you have to be at your games on the weekend. So I missed out on a lot of them. So they've really shaped and influenced me as a thinker and a leader, because, you know, they're not, you know, pulling me back, you know, to their needs. They put their needs aside because they, I think, in their hearts know that I have a higher calling. So,
well, they all sound like remarkable role models, and it's interesting how important they are in our development. All of them, including your kids. That's really a remarkable story.
Yeah.
The Digit. What's coming up in the near future with your work with Play It Forward Sport, with Digit Murphy Athletics, and how can listeners learn more about what you're doing?
So first off, a couple of websites. DigitMurphyAthletics.com is basically a whole slew of coaching consulting services that I've kind of leveraged all my experiences over 25 years to create. And essentially, I do things like I help parents and students navigate the college process as, you know, because the recruiting process is crazy right now. And there's tons of people out there that, you know, will, you know, pretty much tell you anything you want to hear. But I kind of call myself, you know, sometimes the dream crusher, because I tell people the truth and I tell them how to navigate that process in a real meaningful mindful way. I also help coaches. I'm the mentor coach for USA Hockey, so I help coaches kind of navigate the process if they want, as a mentor for them. I also have coached several tournament teams. I have some little kid teams where it's really fun. We've kind of developed this whole concept around hockey. We call it free hockey, and we empower mostly girls and women, but I have coached boys, but girls and women to make decisions. As a side note, David, one of the things that I believe in hockey is there's a different way to coach girls than boys as well. And I've mentored some coaches to talk about that model, because I believe that females in general sometimes are paralyzed by decision making in sports because they don't want to be yelled at by their coach. So when you coach them a certain way that's more free and more able to make decisions, it makes them play better. So I do that on the Digit Murphy side. There's just a few things, but go to DigitMurphyAthletics.com. I have a Facebook, Digit Murphy Athletics, and I have a Twitter, at Digit Murphy. I kind of use my I just use my regular name for my business. Now on the Play It Forward side, you know, again, playitforwardsport.org, Play It number 4 Sport. That's our Twitter handle, at Play It 4, the number 4 Sport. What we do there is a couple of things that we're doing right now is we're launching the United Women's Lacrosse League under our Play It Forward banner, which will launch in June. We also are doing several programs under our Play It Forward model. We are doing a Campus Kids where we bring kids into women's sports games, and we bring a bunch of kids in there and we talk about education, the importance of education, and they go watch women's sports. We're launching some corporate team building campaigns under our model. So if you get on our website, you'll see some of the our programming initiatives that we have. But you know, I think basically in a short time, David, we've been able to really get our model out there. I mean, when you think about this, we started in March after we won the Clarkson Cup with the Blades, and we talked earlier about it really being the time to get women's leadership opportunities on the map. So, you know, through Play It Forward, we're doing that. We're creating a dialogue. We're talking about the problem. And essentially, when I was in the NCAA, when I was in the Boston, on the Boston Blades and the CWHL, when you're in those leagues, it's really hard to create that dialogue because you're in the day-to-day. Now what we've been able to do is, you know, to do that is to create that dialogue and sustain it and really make a difference.
It all sounds good. Digit, who do you know personally who's doing remarkable work?
Well, I failed to mention the other project that I'm heavily ensconced with, which is the New England Sports Village. It's a huge initiative in our area to bring community and to bring the sport back to community. And there's a couple of really inspirational entrepreneurs, Joe Fitzpatrick and David Boucher, who came up with this concept. And they're building a pool, 2.5 sheets. They're building a hotel. And it's essentially an Olympic Village. And it's between Providence and Foxborough. And the reason that I say they're doing amazing work is because what these guys are doing is they're trying to take the sports model, which is really right now a greedy one. It's about money. It's a money grab. It's about how many kids can we cram in and have kids be elite. And what they're trying to do is take sports, bring it into the community, keep it affordable, have kids like go. It's a concept of old school sports in a kind of a huge model. So those guys are doing remarkable work. You know, other people that are doing remarkable work, you know, in my opinion, is we just got back from a conference called Speak English 5. And it doesn't have anything to do with literacy. It's got to do with creating a dialogue around women's professional sports. And the reason it's called Speak English 5 is that the founder's last name is English, Gisette English. She has 5 kids. and speak is around the conversation. But we just got back from this conference, and what they're trying to do is help women in the sports community. They're trying to help wives of husbands in the NFL and the NBA, you know, help their husbands as they transition into other careers than football. But it was just really heartwarming to be with these women who have followed men around in their whole careers, and to hear their stories, their individual stories, how they're going out and helping women in domestic violence situations, and how they help each other in so many different ways. So the Speak English 5 folks are doing great work. We met a woman also there named Tamika Holyfield. She has a nonprofit where she's helping domestic abuse victims as well. That's Evander Holyfield's niece. Just amazing people that are inspirational.
Well, thank you for mentioning them. This has been a really fascinating conversation, Digit, about a paradigm shift in thinking, among other things, around sports, women's issues, leadership issues, and I'm really grateful that you took the time to share these stories with our audience today on Smashing the Plateau.
I'm happy to be here and loving it. As you can tell, I like to talk.
My guest today has been Digit Murphy, president, co-founder of Play It Forward Sport and Digit Murphy Athletics. Thank you again, Digit, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.